Hi, everybody. My name is Soya Jung. I'm on the steering committee of the People's Coalition for Justice, and it's my honor to introduce tonight's speakers. So the first speaker tonight is Tyree Scott. Tyree has been involved in the effort to force the construction industry and the building trade unions to racially integrate their workforces. In a protest against the Washington State Highway Department not adhering to affirmative action hiring procedures, Tyree once broke into the I-90 bridge and opened the draw span to halt traffic. He has organized protests, demonstrations, marches. He's gotten arrested and gone on hunger strikes for the purpose of making the racial integration of the working class apparent to all. So it's my honor to introduce Tyree Scott.
Well, as most of you can see, it's a long time since I've been on a hunger strike, huh? I got my Juan Jose Boca Negro on tonight. Well, I'm really pleased to be here, and I really am an old guy. I mean, but I wouldn't want to get called over until they put me in the same category with Cindy, and then I felt like, yes. But there are three of us who are going to talk to you tonight, so I think it's important, rather than when they asked me, you know, what should we say about you, I thought about that story about the bridge, because I thought only about young people coming here tonight, and I thought, well, let's tell them some story about some adventurous stuff, and then they'll show up and we'll talk about it, those kinds of things. But that kind of... I guess there's a context for that kind of adventurism, but that's not the heart and soul of what our work is about, and I'll try to talk more about that. But I said there's three of us talking, and I think it's important that we understand the context in which all of us are talking in, the context of the struggle itself, so that even though at that time We've been doing things at different places, the context in which this struggle is taking place is in the context of the great class struggle, the struggle between those who own all the means and the struggle for those who produce everything in the world. Now, that's the struggle I think that the context in which we've been involved in this struggle. So that this struggle began with me, because I'm older than both Cindy and Aaron. And of course it didn't. Nor did it begin with my parents or with their parents. But the nature of the struggle is a protracted one. And so that it goes on before us and it'll go on after us. And we're but a part in a period. And so that's why I think it's important that we look at it in this context, because your time has come. And you're a continuation of the struggle that we've been engaged in or that we inherited. And it's not the same because some things have changed. I mean, but it's the same struggle. So even though things have changed in the context of it. So I'm going to talk about, first I'll just tell you a little bit about my own personal history and about the movement that I'm identified most with. But I'd like to say that I want to be identified most with the class struggle as opposed to the struggle for racial equality. Because the struggle for racial equality is in the context of the class struggle. Because the other night I heard I don't know if anybody in here went to the camp dinner, because they cost $65 a head to come in there, and y'all don't look like a $65 a head crowd. but the guest speaker was this guy named Arthur Fletcher. He's about 15 years older than me, and he reinvented a whole lot of things that, you know, while he was talking. And he was billed as the father of affirmative action. Now, he was appointed by Richard Nixon as an assistant secretary of labor. And so you can imagine, and he's a Republican, so you can imagine then who he was. But I think One point he made, which I want to talk to you guys about, but he said that he was his father was a Buffalo soldier. Now, he was bragging about that. Now, most of you in the room at least have heard of the Buffalo soldiers. They were these black cavalrymen who the Indians dubbed Buffalo soldiers because they couldn't tell where the horse stopped and the man began, because they were both the same color and all this. And so they got called the Buffalo soldiers. But what was the task of the Buffalo soldiers? That's what we have to look at. These men, fresh up from slavery, their task was to kill Indian people. So now, if you don't understand the context in which you're working, then you can confuse yourself and think that those guys were good guys. So he was bragging that his father was a Buffalo soldier. It's like saying my father was a pimp. But he didn't get that though. He made it as something that he should be proud of, and we should all be proud of the fact that he was a continuation, and he was. He's a modern day Buffalo soldier riding to the rescue. But anyway, I'll start there. In 1965, I was a Buffalo soldier. I was a Marine and I went off to Vietnam. And luckily, I made it back home the following year. But I came home with another attitude about the world. I didn't understand the world, but I didn't think what I was doing was proper. And after 9 years, I got out of the Marine Corps. And 10 years later, when that war ended, 1975, I was also in the streets celebrating the victory of the Vietnamese people. So I made a transition from being a Buffalo soldier to being somebody who opposed U.S. imperialism. I hadn't yet understood the class struggle, but I was moving towards trying to understand that as well. But it wasn't me. And I don't want to put this in the context of myself as an individual, but I lived in a particular time. And it was a time when people had realized that it was time to change, or some things had to change. But I want to talk a little bit about why does the change take place and what's the possibilities of that change going one way or the other. And I think that's what is important, that we need to recognize that although we don't make the times, we don't invite the people out into the streets and say, look, we've been screwed over with long enough, it's time for us to go out and make a change. That doesn't happen. What does happen is a situation any of us might not have any idea why this is going to happen or when it's going to happen. But when it happens, people go out into the streets en masse because they're fed up with the situation and the conditions that exist. But we can't just sit around and wait for that to happen, though, because if we do, we don't know which way they're going to go. People oftentimes, if you listen to the propaganda, we blame our friends sometimes because we don't recognize who the enemy is. Again, we might consider Buffalo soldiers heroes if we don't really try to figure that out. And so I'm talking about the two different times. When at one time, there's a period when everything takes off. Other times, there's a period when almost nothing is happening that we can see anyway. So Cindy's going to talk about her brother, Selmy Domingo, who was a very good friend of a lot of us who are active nowadays. But I want to just say a little bit about something Selman used to always say to us. He always talked about this idea, and he didn't originate with him, but he always talked about it, the idea of the ebb and the flow. And so I was talking earlier that I think that I was lucky enough to live in a period when there was a great flow. But that I'm also living in a period when there's an ebb, when doesn't look like much is going on. We elected Ronald Reagan, and for 12 years, not much went on, we think. But that period is the period where we have to work our hardest. Because in that period, we gather the leadership for the next flow. And in the absence of gathering that leadership, people don't recognize who the enemy is, and we blame the problem on welfare mothers. We blame the problem on the unemployed or on somebody of color, because we haven't figured out that it's the multinational corporations, or it's the people who hold the capital who are causing the problem. And so during that period of the ebb is when we try and educate and develop new leadership, or develop our own leadership, or develop reputation for our organizations and for doing the exemplary work. And so I think that if we hear the speeches tonight and listen to the context of what people, I mean, the context which we're talking, is that that's what had to go on. That we engaged in a period of flow when the people were ready to go out into the streets and demand change. And during the periods of ebb, we need to work to build organization and to educate the new leadership for the next period of the flow. I mean, in my lifetime, not your lifetime, but in Germany, there was a flow, and look who the leadership was. The National Socialists ended up the leadership. Which what we all decided today was really bad ideas. But 20 years before that, in the Soviet Union or in Russia, there was a flow. And the Bolshevik Party ended up the leadership, which we think had some better ideas at that time anyway. And they took the power. There was a flow in South Africa most recently, in the early 90s. And the ANC took the power. Now, it doesn't always mean that things didn't go right from that point on. We're not here to talk about that, but I just want to kind of keep the context in that so we can understand that people in this room, many of your young men came tonight talked about they were a part of a collective. But so I want to just talk a little bit about organization. That after 1968-69, we started to build organization, and we were the Black construction workers, because we knew that we were interested in trying to better our conditions. We didn't see the whole struggle, but we saw that we needed to have an organization to do this. So we built an organization called the United Construction Workers Association. It was a narrow organization because we were trying to address the problems of racial discrimination in the building trades. But it wasn't long before we realized that we needed to unite with broader groups and try to build something even broader. And then eventually, we ended up building LELO, which is an organization that now I'm a part of, that Cindy's also a part of, that's made up of workers from the Asian community, from the Latino community, both men and women, as well as Black workers. And we've got a worldview. But I just want to talk just now just about why we think this question of organization is important and why this group here. Because how many of you in here belong to a student organization? Not very many. But 20 years ago, had I asked that question, there would have been the young students from the Black Student Union. There would have been students from the MESHA, the Mexican American Student Unions. There would have been the Asian Student Union. All these organizations would have existed on the campus, and they created a situation for change on the campuses. There were no, the only programs were the Eurocentric programs that taught about Columbus discovering America. But those student organizations created change. And so now, organizations don't exist. But let me just tell you what these organizations can do. And I'm going to sit on this Cindy talking and Aaron talking, and we can deal with this in the question and answer period. But as an organization, we're able to extend ourselves as individuals. Because I've got certain strengths and I've got certain weaknesses. My organization maximizes my strengths, and it minimizes my weaknesses. So I don't get assigned to do work that I'm not good at, but I get assigned to do work that I'm good at. And so the organization does good work in this area. And other ideas that I might have that I can't say, I should say that I can't write. Well, somebody else might write down those ideas that might have come out of my head. But I got extended as a person in the context of an organization. So organizations extend individuals. And in the hands of working people, organizations become tools. It's our only tools, as a matter of fact. So it's a trade union. Trade unions, for example, is a major tool for working people. You know, they only deal with, in our country, with the questions of economics, but they do just that. Well, were they not organized, they wouldn't even get that accomplished. And so, if I had a message to bring to you tonight, and I could talk to you about, you know, how we closed the bridge down and have you laughing about, you know, how stupid the bosses were and couldn't catch up with us. But the message I would want to bring to you would be that you need to organize, that you need to belong to an organization, and you need not stay in the same one for 30 or 40 years, because you either sharpen the organization or you move on and build other organizations. But individuals have a very difficult time extending themselves, because you can't make all the meetings and you can't do all the issues. So I would say that if my work has meant anything, is that I've been a part of a process that's built a workers' organization in this city that's independent and free of the influence from downtown on the one hand, and has a very broad view of the world, so that we don't think that there's going to be a separate piece for black construction workers in the absence of freeing Leonard Peltier, for example. We don't think that men are going to be able to go forward and have the little ladies stay home. We got some idea about the question of gender discrimination. But these ideas came from, you know, from in the course of struggle. Women in our organization forced the men forward. Were we not organized, that wouldn't have happened. So I want to end by saying that I think that if this group gets anything from this discussion tonight, that it needs to look at this question of the lack of organization amongst young people, amongst the student body, that if you organize, you can push the process forward. Thank you.